When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Story that maps onto reality, and that's why the central narrative is falling apart.
Right now in the United States, people should not be walking around with masks.
We must see the central narrative for the fiction that it is. We are Americans.
While elections are sometimes messy, this was a secure election.
The founders began the fight for human liberty and self-governance, and it's up to us to finish the job.
I tell you what, we are in a truth emergency right now.
This is the end game.
It's Thursday, April 25th, 2024, the 1,191st day of dystopia. I'm your moderator, Chris Paul. Let's be reasonable. A warm welcome and hello to all of you listening to the podcast on the day of its release. The only way to do that is by becoming a paid subscriber at imyourmoderator.substack.com. You can do so for as little as $50 a year or $5 a month, and in doing so, you will be supporting me, the work I do, and this show as it expands. And if you can't or you simply don't want to, continue listening to the podcast for free on a wide variety of podcast platforms, and of course, Rumble. All I ask is that you share it with your friends. You can find the links to the podcast, the writing, the social media, and the merch site by visiting linktree.com/I'mYourModerator. Okay, so yesterday, no podcast. What did we do instead? A live stream. I said it, and it actually happened. Amazing. Now, of course, I also did release that as an audio podcast afterward. If you listened to that, I hope you enjoyed it. I know listening to that sort of kind of slightly interactive live stream as audio only later on is probably frustrating at various points. And so I apologize for that. I hope that wasn't too distracting. But I had a nice time doing the Q&A, and I think that the people who were watching live seemed to enjoy that. I'm considering making that a weekly thing, and I would welcome your feedback. It is important to me to deliver value to the people who are paying to support this podcast and get it the day it's released. I am considering adjusting that as well and going to an ad model for the free version of the show. So as a paid subscriber, you would get no ads and you would get access to the live streams. And if I go that direction, then the idea would be to put out the podcast for free on the day of its release as well, but with those ads, and free subscribers obviously would not have access to the live streams. So I do welcome your feedback. If you are a paid subscriber, feel free to leave comments on the Substack and let me know. And if you joined the live yesterday, I thank you for doing so. I appreciate you taking the time. And it was nice to be able to engage people directly and answer some of those questions. It actually gave me the opportunity to talk about some things I would not normally talk about at length on this podcast. So cool experience. Down to do it again. If everyone is comfortable with that and the feedback is positive about these ideas on how to change the model of the show, then I think I will probably implement that beginning next week. And in that case, I think maybe Wednesday is a good day to do that live stream. Yesterday, we did it at 3 p.m. Eastern. I imagine for a lot of people, mid-afternoon on a weekday is not an ideal time. I am happy to listen to feedback on that as well. I don't think it's going to be a morning thing. I would consider maybe doing it starting as late as 6 or 7 Eastern if a lot of people express that the evening would be better for them. But if I don't hear that feedback, I will probably just go with a mid-afternoon live stream on Wednesdays. And again, that would be for paid subscribers only. I would release those episodes for free a week later. As I did yesterday, I would send on that day a Substack post to paid subscribers with the link to the Rumble feed at some point within the couple hours before the show starts. Some people expressed that they had trouble with that link and getting that to open for whatever reason. I don't know what's going on with that. I wish I could help. I can't. The link works just fine for me. But anyhow, I've been looking to change the format up a little bit and try to make things generally more accessible. So maybe we'll try this and see if it works. All right, enough of that. Let's get into the show. There has been some interesting news in the world of social media this week, and despite how much people may not like social media is still an important and relevant factor in our society and in this America First movement and just generally in the awakening that we are in the midst of. For better or worse, this is our comms infrastructure. This is how we break down regime control over information. This fifth generational warfare, the information war, it is about taking control of the means of information. Is control over the flow of information and the information that flows going to come from a centralized and centralizing authoritative source from the regime, or is it going to be decentralized among the people? One way or another, and again, for better or for worse, we are moving to that decentralized model, and we see that same pattern replicating throughout the world across a range of issues, most particularly the emergence of the multipolar world order. Our opinions about these things matter to the extent that those opinions might cause us to abstain from participating in the technological landscape. But short of that, technology will continue proceeding forward. And even if it is a weapon of the enemy, as we have seen, it is our responsibility in that case to seize control of that weapon and use it for good. Communists can make fun of the notion all they want, but it is true that a bad guy with a gun can be stopped by a good guy with a gun. They are using the exact same tool, one for good, one for evil, with the understanding that the good and the evil are not inherent in the gun. And the truth is that even if we abstain from all of it, which if that feels like the right thing for you and feels healthy and moral for you, by all means do it. But it's entirely possible that even while you are abstaining, the system can be acting upon you and changing your life and your experience as it changes the world around you, whether or not you are participating. So to that extent, it is at minimum necessary to understand what's happening. Now, before we get into some of the current social media news that's out there, and there is a lot out there, I want to talk a little bit about the parallel comms and energy infrastructure that I think is emerging. And I think that I have fairly solid reason to believe that this is, generally speaking, the picture that's emerging. And I think I can also make a solid case that its emergence is now inevitable. We are long past the point of stopping its emergence, and therefore we have to figure out how to navigate the world, how to seize control of the enemy's weapon, and how to use it effectively in the pursuit of good. Now, we talked about some of this last night on Devolution Power Hour. I had a great conversation with Just Human and Burning Bright. You can find that by going to Badlands Media's page on Rumble. And over the last three Badlands conferences we've had, the Great American Restoration Tours, we've been joined by retired Lieutenant General Stephen Quast, who's spent a career thinking about and working on many of these issues. And he contributes to the conversations that we have at the conference. He's done shows with John Herald and our friend G Money, who hosts Rug Pull Radio, which is the Bitcoin show. And so through all of our research and these conversations, I believe that we are beginning to see what our technological future looks like with a parallel infrastructure for energy, for communications, for national defense, and for our currency. We are essentially watching Edison versus Tesla play out again in real time, with that process reaching the alternate conclusion this time around. And I understand that many people have their doubts about Elon Musk and his role, but I would encourage you, rather than to think about Elon Musk the person, the owner of all of these private tech companies, think about Elon Musk in his role as a defense contractor. He is the face of companies that are inextricably intertwined with our Department of Defense, therefore our government. So we had one system before, different forms of energy generation. The transmission of energy was done almost exclusively through wires. Same for our communications. And of course, now we have mobile phones and Wi-Fi, but all of that infrastructure still depends on wires somewhere, generally speaking. All of that power, all of those communications eventually move through centralized hubs and various middlemen. And at all of those points, they can be stopped at will by the people who control that infrastructure, those midpoints. To take back a word from the communists, that is unsustainable. The world we are moving toward is peer-to-peer, or if not quite all the way there, at least we would reduce the number of middlemen to one and make sure that there is no centralized control over that middleman. All of that is part of the decentralized infrastructure. No one can just flip a switch and shut you down. So we have Tesla, the quote-unquote car company, building a new energy infrastructure all around the country. They're increasing our battery capacity and technology. They're figuring out new ways to store energy and move energy, and that energy can be directed up toward the infrastructure that will be there in the sky. Elon Musk is building that out as well for the Defense Department. And we have Space Force as the good parallel to NASA to defend our country in cyberspace. We would see significant growth in nuclear power production. Much of that would coincide with Bitcoin mining. And then the Bitcoin infrastructure and ledger would ensure that all of this is verified and verifiable and transparent, keeping it all beyond the grasp of these centralizing and controlling systems. Now, does that sound a bit idealistic and utopian? Well, maybe. Anytime anyone is told, hey, things could be a lot better if we just change this one thing we rely on completely, it often sounds like pie in the sky. You mean I'm going to make this really big investment and everybody else has to do the same thing before we get this potential payoff? Well, the answer sometimes is yes. And the truth is, it is very likely in our near future that we will not have the choice, unless we want to comply. If we want to just give away human liberty for the rest of our lives and encourage other people to do the same thing and increase the chance that everyone will be forced to do the same thing, well, that's everybody's individual option. But if you don't want to do that, then another direction is necessary. And I think everybody is really beginning to understand that in a much deeper way. This is not just about one election. We don't go back to how things were before. I think a lot of people have come to grips with that in some way, but we're not all the way there. November 5th is not the end of the road. And that's why I think it's important to continue looking up ahead, even if some of that is speculative, rather than spending our time giving hot takes on the stories of the day, most of which are purely fictional. Now, for the world I'm describing to be successful, there would have to be cooperation among the nations around the world, because the technological apparatus would necessarily have to be equally available to everyone, if I am understanding things correctly. And then we immediately hit another point where we say, wait a second, you mean like a one world kind of order? They're just all going to cooperate on their own? No, we'd have to force them. And then we'd have to make rules. We would have to have a way to govern all these things on a global basis. But is that the only way? And I think it's clear that that's not the only way. But in order to maintain a system that doesn't require that centralizing, rules-based, one-world control factor, then we would need a system that can provide a reliable and transparent verification method. And again, we come to Bitcoin, a technology whose energy use is necessary for the proof of work. And that proof of work combined with the energy use is what makes it then a national defense infrastructure, according to Jason Lowry, the major in the Space Force who has written the book Soft War. Now, all of this sounds kind of daunting. It's a lot. You're going to give up something you've used and believed you've understood for your entire life in favor of something that you've never used and have a hard time understanding? Well, yeah, that's the thing. But here's the truth. The fiat money in your pocket has Illuminati symbols on it, and it's controlled by the central bankers. The world that has been constructed is their world, and they've done it on the back of that fiat currency in your pocket. It's also true that very few of us have any deep understanding of the money that we use all the time and how that money is used to manipulate and control us, most particularly through taxes, of which inflation is a hidden one, and it continues to get worse. If the central bankers or the centralizing force of a government can change how much the money you've already earned is worth, you are a subject. If they can make you pay property taxes and make you rent something you already own, you're a subject. And to bring this back to legacy media, if they can control what you're allowed to say, what you're allowed to read, and whether or not you're allowed to read or say anything, you're a subject. And of course, much like Elon Musk's companies that are all Department of Defense projects, all of the legacy social media platforms are exactly like that. So we have this infrastructure that was built up by our Defense Department. Incredible research. We are leading the world in technology. And also we have this global regime who has fully infiltrated our government, the American Uniparty. It takes all this technology, this Defense Department technology that is meant to protect the American people, ideally, and they share it with other parts of the regime, the same way they shared our quote-unquote nuclear weapons technology after J. Robert Oppenheimer, quote-unquote, invented the bomb. Somehow the technology just fell into the hands of other communist regimes around the world, all through commie scientists who were already associated with the commie scientist named J. Robert Oppenheimer, who our infiltrated military hired at Bohemian Grove to build the bomb in the first place. So we have these amazing technological platforms that allow us to share information and connect with one another, and also supply us with a never-ending stream of spam and pornography. But let's think about our platforms. We have Facebook, now that's Meta. The man who founded the Telegram app, Pavel Durov, he also founded a platform called VK, which is almost exactly like Facebook. And Telegram is almost exactly like WhatsApp, except much, much better. We had Twitter. That was obviously fully controlled by the global regime. It seems that the controls over X, formerly Twitter, have been taken away from the regime. But as Elon Musk himself has expressed numerous times, that app is a mess. He came in, he said, "We simply cannot uncensor everyone immediately. There are too many things knotted up deep in Twitter's code that are impossible to unwind in any way that would allow us to make this the platform we want it to be on any short timeline." And of course, it's still not that platform now. And so a few years ago, we began to see a bunch of competitors emerge. We had Parler for a bit there. Steve Bannon and Miles Guo and that team released Getter. Getter is fantastic technology. Some people have their doubts about Bannon or Miles Guo, and if that's you, don't use Getter, but Getter is fantastic technology, maybe even a better version of Twitter, but obviously without the user base. And then we have Truth Social, Donald Trump's company, led by Devin Nunes. And while we were at GART over the weekend on Saturday night before we did the live Devolution Power Hour, I was just on my phone, as I often am, and I was scrolling through Truth Social and quickly realized that it had gone through a significant upgrade. Truth Social is now very fast. It is as fast as Twitter, I think. That was kind of one of the drawbacks of using Truth Social. It was a little slower. It was a little clunkier. But now it's operating at turbo speed, and it is about to launch a live streaming platform at the same time that X, formerly Twitter, is going to release their TV feature. And ultimately, as I've discussed many times on this podcast, I think X may end up being kind of a central hub that will display content coming in from all sorts of apps. There are even fully decentralized apps on the Nostr protocol that may feed through X, formerly Twitter, or not. I'm not sure about that yet, but we shall see. The point is that these are all beginning to decentralize. And if you have decentralized social media, then you cannot censor. Because if you censor on one of numerous nodes, the other ones almost surely would not be censored. Like if you posted something on Facebook and Facebook flagged that post and made it impossible for anyone to see it, it wouldn't show up in that hub where you get all of your content. But then you could post the same thing over on Truth Social. It wouldn't be flagged there. And while you're viewing your content through that clearinghouse, that main hub, you obviously wouldn't see that post coming in from Facebook, but you would see that content coming in through Truth Social. You would be following the person via that clearinghouse or hub, and that would be pulling in their content from all the other platforms. So if you followed me on the decentralized hub that I think we will see X, formerly Twitter, become, that would be displaying my content from Truth Social or Telegram or Gab or Rumble or whatever it is. And so if one of those platforms, one of those nodes like Facebook or Instagram, wanted to censor my content on their platform, they still wouldn't be able to censor my content on that clearinghouse, that hub. And so that would be where people would be getting their content unless they wanted to have a more restricted and sheltered sort of social media experience. But to reiterate, we have Facebook. It's got its clone or its double in VK and some other platforms. Gab is a very close facsimile to Facebook. You had Twitter originally that got infiltrated and controlled by the regime. Now we have all these little parallel Twitters popping up. You had YouTube, obviously part of Google, as regime as it gets. Also, of course, DARPA technology. Now Rumble is emerging. You could argue that TikTok is kind of a parallel to Snapchat. And so we've got this original set of these DARPA-designed technology platforms that were infiltrated and controlled by the regime. And then what we see emerging is a next generation of social media apps that ultimately share many, if not all, of the same roots, but are beyond that regime control. And rather than working toward becoming more centralized, more controlled, more easily censored, more of a perfect hub for propaganda, what we have instead is something that is uncontrolled and uncontrollable, so that the problems created by censorship and propaganda will only affect the people who choose to have that experience. And obviously, that'll be very sad. We would love for everyone to wake up, for everyone to make it through this thing without going insane. But I have a feeling that we are past that point, and there is a significant presence of evil across our society, and some people just are going to succumb. We can pray for them, we can try to help them, but some people don't want the help. But it seems to me that a parallel infrastructure for all of this is emerging. It is up to us to make that shift. At some point, we are going to have to choose it for ourselves. The failure to make a choice will be the choice to stay in that legacy system. So with all of that in mind, let's get into some of what's happening in the current landscape. This is from the Washington Post on Sunday. As Meta flees politics, campaigns rely on new tricks to reach voters. Days after President Donald Trump clinched a surprise victory in the 2016 presidential election, Mark Zuckerberg touted his company's influence in politics. The CEO proclaimed he was proud Facebook had given many a, quote, voice in this election. We helped millions of people connect with candidates so they could hear from them directly and be better informed, Zuckerberg wrote on Facebook. Now on the eve of a matchup between Trump and President Biden, Meta is changing course. After years of pitching its suite of social media apps as the lifeblood of campaigns, Meta is breaking up with politics. The company has decreased the visibility of politics-focused posts and accounts on Facebook and Instagram, as well as imposed new rules on political advertisers, kneecapping the targeting system long used by politicians to reach potential voters. That is very interesting. I've talked before about advertising on these legacy social media platforms. That is primarily about them having all your data and knowing exactly how to target the people who will be most open to the sort of influence they are about to apply. It is partly about getting you to buy products. That is one of the points of this sort of advertising. But it's also to change your beliefs and your lifestyle. They have, or at least had, essentially all of your data. They knew virtually everything about you. And what they knew about you was kept up to date, always in real time, as you continued to produce more and more data with virtually everything we do in this modern age. It does not require you to be on the internet searching for things, or be posting on social media, or be texting your friends, although they do track all that stuff. They know your location all the time. They know when you go to the grocery store or your favorite coffee shop. They know where you go to get gas. I've mentioned this before, but I had a friend in Los Angeles who did data analysis for the marketing of Hollywood films. And he told me that for a client, he had produced a model that could predict with over 95% accuracy who was going to be getting divorced within the next year, because they could watch people's habits change and where they go, what time they got back home, whether they started frequenting a certain bar at a certain time on a certain day of the week, or whether they spent a lot of time at an all-new apartment complex, consistently within a few feet of someone else's phone, or maybe shopping or spending habits changed, or who knows, maybe they even heard all the conversations in people's houses because people have voice assistants in their houses like Alexa. So they have all that data, all that access to data, and they want to have a successful IPO or a successful product release, or they want to start the Arab Spring. These are the sorts of things that they can do with that kind of targeting. That's what the ad model really is. They are essentially offering the highest bidders the opportunity to change everybody's minds about basically anything, and they have full control over the flow of information. They have the ability to change your mood throughout the day whenever they want if you are consistently interacting with those legacy social media products. And they've always had that ability. They have had that ability for years and years. It is absolutely true that you can become addicted to the dopamine release you get from seeing likes pop up on your Instagram photos. They know that. That is how they keep you on the platform. The same holds true if they're able to make you anxious or angry. And of course, once they make you feel that way, Then they simply tell you what you should buy or what you should believe. And if they want you to share that belief once you've adopted it, well, they can just incentivize your sharing it. This is high-level manipulation that most of us by now understand they've been using. We have been subject to this high-level manipulation. And a lot of people make the mistake of thinking that it can't affect them. It's easy to fall into that belief that once we are aware of the manipulation, we are able to exist fully outside of it. But we should understand that's not really true. Many of these apps are literally monitoring the way your eyes move when you see certain content, so they can understand exactly how you're reacting to everything they're displaying and then exploit that. We should not be naive about how effective that is. So when we hear about advertising on legacy social media platforms, this is what we should think of. Not your experience of seeing some ad for some product or service as you scroll through your feed. Though, of course, we've all had the experience of talking about or searching on the internet for some sort of product that we want, and then a version of that product being advertised directly to us the next time we're on one of these apps. Back to the article. Waves of layoffs have eviscerated the team responsible for coordinating with politicians and campaigns, according to people familiar with the matter, who spoke on the condition of anonymity to discuss private personnel matters. This includes foreign-based workers and U.S. employees who promoted the company's products to politicians and fielded questions from campaigns about their services. And that strikes me as a pretty blatant obfuscation. These people were not just talking to campaigns about the services they offer. They were fielding messages from those campaigns about what kinds of posts needed to be censored. We have plenty of proof of that already through the Freedom of Information Act releases from state governments and the federal government concerning their interactions with these social media companies to fulfill political goals. I was personally a target of that myself in 2020. I have mentioned many times that my face appears in FOIA documents showing emails between the California Secretary of State's office, a PR firm called SKD Knickerbocker that worked with the Biden campaign, and the social media platforms. This all happens through what they call portals. Requests are submitted by people with access to those portals. It is essentially a white glove service to protect whatever entity has access to that portal. And I know this from firsthand experience as well. I had a company that worked in social media management for celebrities and high profile brands, and we had access on behalf of our clients to those portals so that we could work directly with the social media companies to the benefit of our clients. It's a bit comical to see the Washington Post pretend that the contact between the platforms and the campaigns was only about what products the platform offered. An advertising sales team, which once embedded with the Trump team during the 2016 election, is now responsible for many of their previous responsibilities, the people said. And they're referring to those teams mentioned above who would interface with the political campaigns. Meta's shift away from current events is forcing campaigns to upend their digital outreach in a move that could transform the 2024 election. Comparing March 2020 to March 2024, both the Biden and Trump campaigns saw 60% declines in their average engagement per Facebook post, a Washington Post review found, with double-digit declines on Instagram. The Trump team has cast Meta's moves as an effort to tip the scales in favor of Biden. The Biden campaign, meanwhile, has already begun to shift its online focus, rolling out a cadre of influencers and volunteers to spread their messages across private spaces on social networks. And I would say, obviously, the Trump campaign has a point. If you have 70% of the people on your side and the other side has 30%, and truth be told, I think the numbers are probably further apart than that, but let's say 70-30. If you know that you are not allowed to favor one side over the other, but you still do want to favor one side over the other, then your option is to eliminate all of it, because that will hurt the popular side quite a bit more. It will also eliminate the evidence that one side is more popular in the first place. Still, in tight races across the country, neither Democrats nor Republicans can afford to ignore Facebook, the world's largest social media network. Political ad spending on social media is expected to almost double from $324 million in 2020 to $605 million in 2024, according to estimates from digital analytics firm eMarketer. They're not paying to show you Joe Biden flyers. They're paying to make sure you are fed specific content, a lot of that content, totally organic and natural content. They're just going to make sure you see it. That's what all the money's for. They're not attempting to convince you. They're attempting to change your mind without convincing you. There's no other platform that reaches as many voters at that scale, said Eric Wilson, a managing partner at Republican Campaign Tech Incubator Startup Caucus. So campaigns would be foolish to walk away from that. Meta spokesperson Danny Lever argued that the changes are a response to user feedback. These changes are intended to impact what people see because that is what they told us they wanted, to see less political content and have more controls. This approach builds on years of work and is being applied to everyone. Now, I imagine they're either misrepresenting what people want or will find in the future that they are misunderstanding what people want, because the proliferation of political posts on legacy media up until the pretty recent past has predominantly pushed one viewpoint or the controlled opposition to that viewpoint, and people are sick of all that stuff. They're sick of being lied to about politics and being censored and being propagandized. But user feedback is what is guiding Facebook to diminish or eliminate political posts. They sell your personal data. They don't care about your user feedback. They create your behaviors if you are hooked into that app and addicted to that app. They don't care about user feedback. They can create user sentiment. That is what the technology is literally for. More than a decade ago, Silicon Valley courted the political world. Zuckerberg moderated a 2011 town hall with President Barack Obama, broadcast live on Facebook. Presidential debates in the 2016 campaign streamed on Facebook Live. Advertising employees kept politicians and campaigns up to date on the company's latest tools, even embedding with the Trump team in 2016. But following widespread outrage over attempts by Russian operatives to infiltrate social media to influence the 2016 presidential race, Meta, then known as Facebook, began rejiggering its strategy. The company scrapped commissions for its political ad sales reps and created a new site to promote its tools for politicians across the political spectrum. And yes, you just heard Russia, 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 and McCambridge Analytica. The January 6th, 2021 attack on the U.S. Capitol, which was partially organized on Facebook, sped this retreat. Soon after the siege, the company announced it would reduce the amount of political content appearing in users' news feeds. So you see that? The very violent insurrection meant that Facebook had to remove political posts. We can't have those Trump supporters talking about politics on our site. We can't have them showing one another that, yes, they see too that there's no way Joe Biden received 81 million real lawful American votes. So we better shut down that whole narrative as well. Any talk about Joe Biden stealing the election, well, that's repeating the big lie. And we're going to have to make sure those people do not have a voice on Facebook. And the very violent insurrection is the justification for all of that. Look what happens if we let you MAGA people have free speech. People don't want politics and fighting to take over their experience on our services, Zuckerberg told investors 3 weeks after the attack. Well, the truth is, the people who put all the big money into these legacy social media platforms to use their micro-targeted, quote-unquote, advertising, absolutely do want politics and fighting to take over the user experience on Facebook. There is also the problem that people have a tendency to misrepresent their own desires. They might say that they just want to see pictures of their family and keep in touch with their friends who they don't get to see a lot. And they also like to follow a community for one of their hobbies or a TV show they like. And all of those things might be true. People have a range of justifications to explain why they remain addicted to these legacy social media platforms. But generally speaking, beyond those priorities, we find the real reasons, and the real reasons are because they are addicted to what they are seeing, because the platform is manipulating them, and part of that is the political conversation. The other problem is that the virtue signaling and the constant political conversation on those social media platforms has actually become part of our experience of reality now, in person. But let's continue. In February, Meta announced that it would stop recommending political content from accounts users don't follow on Instagram or its upstart text-based app, Threads, which is a product Meta created for people who no longer felt comfortable on Twitter due to its marginal increases in free and honest speech. Instagram head Adam Mosseri warned last year that Threads would not, quote, encourage politics and, quote, hard news on the platform because it wasn't worth the scrutiny. The pullback has affected major news outlets, dramatically impacting engagement. The 25 most cited news organizations in the United States lost 75% of their total user engagement on Facebook and 58% of their interactions on Instagram between the first quarter of 2022 and the first quarter of 2024, according to data analysis by The Post. Right-leaning news outlets such as Newsmax, The Daily Wire, Fox News, and Breitbart suffered bigger declines than their mainstream counterparts on Instagram, but no such partisan split occurred on Facebook, the analysis found. Now, is that due to censorship of those mainstream media outlets? Or are people just totally checking out of the censorship experience on Instagram? Instagram just is an absolute demoralization machine with an obsessive focus on materialistic goods and cultural branding and signaling. If you want to be permanently unhappy, Instagram is the best way to pursue your permanent unhappiness. Also, if you would like to be totally clueless about politics, it is the best platform for you to be focused on. I have people in my life who are on the more awake side of things, but still spend their time on Twitter and Instagram, and I can watch them progressively become more clueless. It's like the apps are intentionally reverting them to their prior form, and there is no reason to believe that they are not doing that specifically and by design. Back to the article. It's just an interesting moment, said Natalie Stroud, a professor at the University of Texas at Austin who studies social media. There seems to be just a pattern away from news and politics on social media, and it just makes me think, where will people go for this information, or will they just go without it? Well, Natalie, it's very likely that they're going to go to a platform that isn't censored all the time, that doesn't consistently try to usher and corral them deeper into the false reality. Research suggests that social media draws an inadvertent audience to news about current events, increasing users' knowledge about politics. One 2020 study found that deactivating Facebook for the 4 weeks before the 2018 U.S. midterm election decreased users' factual understanding of news and political polarization. Most people don't care about politics that much, and so they're not going to go out and seek information about politics, said Joshua Tucker, a professor at NYU who studies social media and politics. Because people were on social media platforms for non-political reasons, they got exposed to more political information. How about that? The claim is that being away from these legacy social media platforms decreases their factual understanding of news and political events. But of course, the qualitative assessment on whether or not what is being repeated constitutes a knowledge of a fact-based reality is entirely relative to and derivative of information from the authoritative source. Stepping away from legacy social media platforms and mainstream media outlets, whether it's on the TV or through newspapers, the internet, whatever else, stepping away from all of that would make you less informed about the official story within the central narrative, But that itself is a distortion. So any reduction in knowledge derived from those distorted, supposedly authoritative sources is better. You are consuming and adopting fewer falsehoods. That leads you on a path toward truth, not away from it. But again, these people are insane. All of them experience total inversion within the false reality. Their entire existence is within the false reality. Meanwhile, political campaigns are adjusting to this new reality. Biden appears to be countering the trend by posting more frequently on social media accounts. Well, actually, Biden does not post at all. Biden's people post for him. Biden does not post. But Biden is posting more frequently, including from official White House pages, to drive engagement. Biden-linked Facebook posts increased from about 300 in March 2020 to more than 600 in March 2024, while Trump's posts dropped from more than 1,000 in March 2020 to about 200 in March 2024. While Trump dramatically increased posts to his own social network, Truth Social, he has refrained from publishing frequently on Twitter, Facebook, or YouTube. Top Trump campaign advisor Chris LaCivita likened Meta's push away from politics to a form of shadow banning, when tech companies allow users to post but secretly depress who sees the content. People should be concerned and Congress should have questions, he said. I think big tech would be absurd if they think Republicans would not have a concern about them putting their finger on the scale of organic political speech. And of course, that is exactly what they're doing in the way I described earlier. By contrast, the Biden campaign headed into the 2024 race with the understanding that it would be difficult to reach voters online. I mean, what? Why would that be the case? Why would it be difficult for the Biden campaign to reach voters online? It's part of the Obama machine. Obama was the best person ever at reaching voters online, or so we're told. These people have all the money. Their friends own and run the social media platforms. They have the entirety of the Uniparty supporting their efforts. So why is it hard for them to reach voters online? Oh, right. It's because they don't really have any voters. Instead, the campaign has been relying on digital advertising and volunteers to spread the word about the president in private digital spaces such as messages and social media groups. Why would they be shifting to private messages and groups? It's almost like when they post their content in public and people are allowed to respond, the response is always really, really terrible for the communists. I mean, Ron DeSantis was only despised by Trump supporters and probably the stray communist every now and then. But when the DeSantis campaign op would post, their posts got destroyed in the comments. Imagine what that is like for Biden with the Ron DeSantis conservative cuckold crowd expressing strong anti-Biden sentiments despite the fact that they actually support him. Trump supporters want nothing to do with Biden, and most of Biden's quote-unquote voters from 2020 don't want anything to do with Biden. So there is no support anywhere online for whatever Joe Biden is. That's why they don't post about Joe Biden in public, because it's always bad. It's always bad. I imagine we will hear stories throughout this year about how successful these private campaigns are going for the Joe Biden campaign, whatever that is. Political campaigns of all types have sought to overcome Meta's ad targeting limits by using their own data or publicly available information such as voter registrations to customize which ads are shown to certain audiences on Facebook. But trying to match voter files to individual users isn't always precise and doesn't completely replace the value that Meta's targeting options once offered campaigns, said Wilson, the conservative digital strategist. Facebook knows a lot about its users, Wilson said. It's some of the most valuable advertising data in the world, but it's not available for political campaigns. He means it's not available for political campaigns anymore. And why is that? I guess something must have changed. You have to wonder what it is. If you ask me, my theory is that The regime has been cut off from their main sources of data, their access to that great cloud in the sky where all our data ascends. They are essentially saying that their tool no longer works to their benefit, so they don't want anyone else to be able to use it either. This is the reason why parallel platforms and systems and infrastructure are necessary. It's also worth noting this description of how they use voter registration data. I thought we weren't allowed to look at that. If we get voter registration data, that means that voters' personal information is exposed to all those right-wing MAGA extremists, and they're going to be harassed and threatened at their homes. The people being harassed and threatened by their homes are being harassed and threatened by the regime as they use all of these people's private personal information to exploit and manipulate them through these platforms. The threat to the individual voter comes from this right here. It doesn't come from people who want to ensure that the voters who are in a state's voter registry are actually real, lawful American voters who are eligible to vote. And so let's wrap this up. Still, those campaign ads may become more critical in a world in which users are seeing less news and politics on their feeds. How are voters supposed to learn about the issues that are at stake in an election? Wilson asked. It's, I think, ultimately troubling for both sides, but really our democracy in general, that politics is being treated as like a four-letter word and pushed out of the public square. Now, why is that? Well, one entire set of political beliefs had already been pushed out of the public square. For whatever reason, they're not able to do that anymore, so they have to figure out a different way to accomplish the same goal, which is to make sure that the truth is not broadly spread and that the America First movement does not continue to grow on their platforms. If they can't use censorship and they can't control what people put out and what information comes in, well, then they have to eliminate all the information of that variety. The ideological battle is over. They lost. They have no majority whatsoever. They can't even see a possibility of a future majority with how small they are. So they just eliminate the conversation completely. And yes, this is a blatant admission of the fact that we have a vast, vast majority and that our argument is true and convincing. Their tool no longer works. So rather than allow us to use it for our benefit, they're simply going to break it for everyone. And so let's talk about the benefit they are now losing. This is from Fox News on Tuesday. Facebook has interfered with U.S. elections 39 times since 2008, according to a study. Facebook has interfered with elections in the United States at least 39 times since 2008, according to a study by the Media Research Center. Last month, MRC Free Speech America researchers found that Google interfered with elections in the United States 41 times over the last 16 years. The team then set its sights on Facebook and concluded that although Meta CEO Mark Zuckerberg appears to believe in free speech, his company's actions prove otherwise. Like Google, Facebook has an extensive history of interfering in U.S. elections, but it's not completely fair to compare the two companies. I believe some part of Mark Zuckerberg believes in free speech. Google management clearly does not. But regardless of what Mr. Zuckerberg believes, his company's policies and practices have resulted in a great deal of censorship that always seems to target the same side of the political spectrum, and it needs to stop, Media Research Center founder and president Brent Bozell told Fox News Digital. And I'm not going to go through all of this. Please check the article out on your own if you want to get the whole thing. MRC Free Speech America said Facebook has censored 2024 presidential candidates, including Robert F. Kennedy Jr., and 2022 Senate and congressional candidates. In 2021, Facebook, quote, deleted Virginia gubernatorial candidate Amanda Chase's account, end quote. And it, quote, cranked up its censorship apparatus with the special focus on Donald Trump and, quote, shuttered political advertising 1 week before the election in 2020, according to the MRC. The researchers wrote that Facebook's infamous censorship of then-President Trump included multiple campaign ads and numerous anti-Biden-Harris ads ahead of Election Day. Facebook also censored various pro-life candidates, including Marsha Blackburn in 2016, and suspended numerous pro-Trump pages and pro-Bernie Sanders groups in 2016, according to the MRC. Facebook was just as bad as Google in the 2020 presidential election. We see some signs that Facebook might be pulling back from its massive censorship efforts. As Google's election interference is now on the rise, it would be a welcome change if Facebook truly followed its CEO's vision for keeping the company out of the electioneering business, the researchers told Fox News Digital. Now, a lot of people are familiar with a man named Robert Epstein's research into Google and how their manipulation of their search features and other features legitimately shifted millions of votes in presidential elections. Now, that may well be interference, but when people forward explanations like that without recognizing the actual election fraud and manipulation that happens, I have a tendency to question those people. Now, I'm not saying it's bad that they are focused on one particular aspect and trying to draw out all the details of that aspect, but I think it's important to always remind people that it's not just that thing. It's not just the censorship of the Hunter Biden laptop. And those are two very similar subjects. These are things that changed people's minds in order to shift the election, but they are by no means the biggest factor. If you can change somebody's mind and get them to vote a certain way, I mean, I guess that's the game. It's an ugly and manipulative and underhanded game, but that's a game. And if that's within the rules, then I guess it's fair play. But to put that out front when the election system itself is wholly unable to produce a legitimate outcome, then it begins to seem like a distraction or an obfuscation from the more important issues. It is easily understandable, and it's something that most people have some level of hands-on experience with. So if that's the benefit to these efforts, all good. But there are much deeper, darker problems lurking underneath. And so then we have TikTok, which we have discussed at great length a few times on this podcast now. If you want to hear a lengthier discussion of my position on TikTok, you can go to the search feature at imyourmoderator.substack.com. That will search the archives. Just simply type in TikTok and the episode should come right up. But let's check out some comments from Nebraska Senator Pete Ricketts, who seems to be a committed member of the uniparty right in the 2022 midterms. Ricketts came out to endorse a candidate in the primary while Trump had endorsed someone else. Ricketts, who was the term-limited outgoing governor in 2022, endorsed a man named Jim Pillen, who became governor. And then when little Ben Sasse abandoned his Senate seat to go be president of the University of Florida, Pillen appointed Ricketts to the Senate seat. And everybody always talks about how Nebraska is deep red, but then they also split electoral votes, and that one electoral vote could just go blue at any time. All of these are signs of massive corruption in Nebraska, but let's listen to Pete Ricketts tell us how the illegitimate government is going to protect us from whatever's coming out on TikTok.
Well, let's look at where young people are getting their news. Nearly a third of adults 18 to 29, these young people in the U.S., are regularly getting their news exclusively from TikTok. Pro-Palestinian and Hamas, pro-Hamas hashtags are generating 50 times the views on TikTok right now, despite the fact that polling shows Americans overwhelmingly support Israel over Hamas. These videos have more reach than the top 10 U.S. news websites combined. This is not coincidence. The Chinese Communist Party is doing this on purpose. They are pushing this racist agenda with the intention of undermining our democratic values. And if you look at what's happening at Columbia University and other campuses across the country right now, they're winning.
Now, all of that is ridiculous. He is suggesting that what comes out of TikTok is being manipulated to overexpose that one viewpoint, and his proof of that relies on reference to polling, as if the polls provide a better assessment of what the public thinks than what's being posted about and engaged with on social media, which is not to say that what's being posted about and engaged with on social media is a great judge of the state of things either. But the reason it's not a perfect judge of that is because of the manipulation, the censorship, the propaganda, the elimination of certain viewpoints, which is exactly what Pete Ricketts is advocating for. We could have an absolutely exquisite understanding of what our peers believed, what the public at large believes, based on all that data that is available to certain parties, just not us. It is possible that the phenomenon Pete Ricketts is describing is the exact same phenomenon that caused Facebook to eliminate political conversation altogether. Everything is so one-sided because people actually line up with that one position and don't line up with the other one. We do not live in a 50-50 country, and issues like Ukraine or Israel or immigration are not 50-50 issues. It doesn't matter what results they're able to generate in opinion polling. It doesn't even matter what results they're able to generate in fraudulent elections. But let's give Pete Ricketts the benefit of the doubt and assume that he is properly describing the state of things on TikTok when he almost certainly is not. Some company probably released some study. He's pulling that number in from that. It could be the ADL for all we know, or Media Matters. We've discussed those issues before. They have no problem generating their own social media phenomena and then using the evidence they have created of that phenomena to produce studies like this and push particular political viewpoints and solutions. He says those videos have more views than the top 10 news websites combined, and that's not a coincidence. The Chinese Communist Party is doing that on purpose. And so he is basically telling us that we need to agree to allow them to censor certain technology and certain viewpoints because Israel is good and China is bad. These are the viewpoints of the people who have been in control of legacy social media. They have had full control, and despite that, the prevalence of anti-regime viewpoints has continued to grow while they have full control. He is now asking for more control in an attempt to thwart the spread of those anti-regime viewpoints. And the justification is about the interference from foreign countries. They will soon be using the same excuses to go after Telegram. But let's back up a bit. I addressed this on a podcast last year when this article came out. But this is from May 22nd, 2023 in Bloomberg. TikTok will soon grant Oracle full access to code and algorithm. TikTok will soon grant Oracle Corporation full access to its source code, algorithm, and content moderation material as part of efforts to alleviate national security concerns about the app. Oracle will also begin monitoring the controlled gateways where data comes in and out of the secure environment it set up on servers to host data from TikTok's U.S. users, according to a statement from the social media company Monday. The work is part of TikTok's Project Texas, a plan to cordon off U.S. users' data and allow its technology to be reviewed by partners like Oracle to assess security risks. The social media company introduced the plan to alleviate criticism from policymakers who worry that its ownership by a Chinese tech company, ByteDance Limited, opens the door to influence or data collection by the Chinese government. TikTok is currently facing federal and state-level legislation that aims to ban or limit the app's use in America on national security grounds. So they have been trying to alleviate these issues now for at least a year, but truthfully, a lot longer than that. The idea that former Trump Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin is going to be part of the group that acquires TikTok after ByteDance divests was not something that was set in place now for years since Trump had that idea back in 2020. That's a little hard for me to believe, particularly knowing that TikTok is already working with Oracle, which was founded and run by Larry Ellison, who is a Trump ally. And so knowing all that, what should we think of the fact that Senator Pete Ricketts is out there telling us he's going to protect us from TikTok's manipulations that are now hurting Israel. He's going to protect us from the app that's hurting Israel by allowing people to see the content of the people who don't agree with Israel. And if you agree with Israel, all good. But if your position happens to be a minority position or a tiny minority position, you don't just get to change that by seizing control over the means of information. As we have seen, it doesn't work anyway. And so then we have Truth Social, which, as I mentioned earlier, has undergone some significant tech upgrades over the course of the last week. This is from yesterday in Just the News. Truth Social CEO calls on House to investigate potential unlawful manipulation of DJT stock. Devin Nunes, the CEO of Trump Media and Technology Group, is asking House committee leaders to investigate the potential unlawful manipulation of DJT stock. In a letter to the committees, Nunes pointed out that DJT has appeared every day since April 2nd on NASDAQ's Reg SHO threshold list, which he said is indicative of unlawful trading activity. The concern comes after TMTG began being traded late last month on the NASDAQ stock market. This is particularly troubling given that naked short selling often entails sophisticated market participants profiting at the expense of retail investors, Nunes wrote in the letter released on Tuesday. Reports indicate that as of April 3rd, 2024, DJT was the single most expensive stock to short in U.S. markets by a significant margin, meaning that brokers have a significant financial incentive to lend non-existent shares. They are basically just selling IOUs to DJT stock. The California Republican is also a former chairman of the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence. Nunes also wrote that, quote, data made available to us indicate that just four market participants have been responsible for over 60% of the extraordinary volume of DJT shares traded. Citadel Securities, Virtu Americas, G1 Execution Services, and Jane Street Capital. And so those are some interesting names. Citadel is Ken Griffin. Ken Griffin was a major DeSantis backer. Virtu is founded by Vincent Viola, who Trump had nominated for Army Secretary. G1 is part of Susquehanna International. That is founded by Jeff Yass, who already has a massive stake in TikTok. And then Jane Street Capital was founded by people who used to be with Yass at Susquehanna and then later employed none other than Sam Bankman-Fried and his odd little sidekick, Caroline Ellison. Now, we're going to have to see how all of this unravels and what these relationships mean, but this whole thing is becoming less opaque by the day. Jeff Yass has a massive stake in TikTok and also a massive stake in Truth Social. At some point, these things are just going to lock in place. You can go ahead and let the cable news make fun of Truth Social as much as they want. It doesn't mean anything. Let's get back to this article in Just the News. The former House Intelligence Committee chairman called on the committees to, quote, open an investigation of anomalous trading of DJT to determine its extent and purpose, and whether any laws, including RICO statutes and tax evasion laws, were violated so that the perpetrators of any illegal activity can be held to account. Now, do you think that Devin Nunes is just making all this up? He just has a suspicion and thinks they should investigate? I highly doubt that. It is very likely that he knows exactly what is going on and exactly who is doing it, and he probably knows where the trail of all that information is as well. He argued that, quote, such an inquiry is needed to protect shareholders, including TMTG's retail investors, that's us, and might also, quote, shed light on the need for policy changes, such as closing the Reg SHO loophole for market makers, requiring brokers to better document their efforts to locate and borrow stock, and stiffening penalties for illegal naked short sellers. And so I have been interacting recently with an account on Truth Social that goes by Raider Pete, and he is kind of giving me an education on how all of this works. And I will not suggest that I fully understand the intricacies of all of this, but it looks like that at some point next week, we could begin seeing these naked short sellers completely lose it all, as they have to actually acquire the stock to be able to back all of their IOUs, which means they are going to have to continually pay higher and higher prices in order to acquire all of that stock. They wanted it to drop. It didn't drop far enough, and it looks like they're going to be left holding the bag. Now, as far as I'm concerned, that looks to me like drainage. This is not some random occurrence. All of this stuff seems to be highly planned out and coordinated. We are going to be getting a full public version and the rest of the lesson that many people learned a few years ago with the Wall Street apes phenomenon with GameStop and AMC. And it will be amazing to see that DJT is the stock that put an end to this practice of market manipulation, always screwing over the retail investors. Now, I think it's easy to get lost in all of the various platforms and exactly what they do and exactly which controversy matches with which platform and how the new platforms might be better, even though they're not actually better yet. And also no one's there. Why should we move to those? Even from the information war standpoint, a lot of people think, well, that's not where the battlefield is. Our job is to wake up normies. No, our job is not to wake up normies. Normies at this point are either going to wake up or not. And what is going to make that difference is them being affected negatively in real life. It's going to require a jarring event. They are going to have to be jolted out of their slumber. If the normies in your life haven't gotten that far yet and you've been talking to them about politics for 4 years, well, it's not going to work. And that's okay. You're not going to win them all over with polite conversation while they hold on to the belief that you are stupid and evil. It's going to require something more. You don't need to stay in the places so that you can show them the truth. And then one day they'll be like, oh yeah, I didn't realize that this poll said that. I'm now prepared to change my mind about everything. That's not going to happen. What can happen, though, is that we can begin to plant our flags in that new parallel system. And to the extent that the parallel system is being built because we appreciate the openness and the free speech and the decentralization, we owe it to ourselves to support those platforms. That means going on to them and using them the way you used the old platforms and encouraging people to come to the new platforms once you have established yourself there. We are being shown simultaneously the emergence of this new parallel infrastructure and all the problems with the old systems. We should consider ourselves fortunate that we are able to watch this as it emerges and adapt more quickly than our peers who are still stuck listening to 24/7 trans content on the Daily Wire. I'll be back tomorrow at the same reasonable time on the same reasonable podcast network. I don't have a network. Masks and lockdowns don't work. They lied to you about a pandemic. And Joe Biden will never be president.
In my mind, that's the end game.
If you're listening to this episode for free, you can support me and support the show and the work I do by signing up for a paid subscription at imyourmoderator.substack.com. You can do so for as low as $50 a year or $5 a month. Comes out to under a quarter per episode, and you'll blast right through the paywall for all of the writing. The merch store is www.cancelcouture.com, and you can find everything else by heading to Linktree, linktree.com/imyourmoderator. And I'll see you soon out on the range.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
In my mind, that's the end game.
Thanks for listening. If you'd like to follow what I'm reading and thinking throughout the day, you can do that by downloading the Telegram Messenger app and going to t.me/I'm your moderator. On social media, you can follow me on Truth Social, Getter, and Gab at I'm Your Moderator. I also have channels on Rumble and BitChute. If you'd like to follow the writing, you can find me at I'myourmoderator.substack.com. The merch site is cancelcouture.com or go direct shop.spreadshirt.com/cancel-couture. If you'd like to support the podcast financially, the best place to do that is Ko-Fi. Go to ko-fi.com/I'myourmoderator. And all of these details will appear in the show notes with each episode. I'll see you soon, down on the range.
It's hell!